Hi, I'm Dave Williams. Radio listeners in Dallas and Fort Worth were recently shocked by the news that Mike Reiner, also known as the Old Gray Wolf, had been fired by iHeartRadio, and that the talk station known as The Freak would flip back to rock and roll as it had been just 16 months earlier. Reiner's a radio legend in Texas. Over his 26 years at The Ticket in Dallas, he created the most unique and popular sports talk format in America. To date, that station has won 4 Marconi Awards as the best sports station in the country. Reiner was inducted into the Texas Radio Hall of Fame on July 3, 2014. In this conversation, he talks about what went wrong with The Freak. Let's start with the big question. What happened?
The big answer to the big question is what the big answer to a question like this always is. And that is that it was just a whole lot of different things. But the bottom line is this, and I know this and I understand it and I wear it and we go on down the road with it. I'll probably have to deal with this for the rest of my days on the planet. But we were brought on board to do a job there, and we just didn't get it done. That's it, in the end game. Now, there were a lot of other factors that went into it, some of which had to do with us, some of which did not. But still, they brought us on board with the belief that we could provide a viable, profitable radio outlet for them, and we didn't do that.
Well, it's a wise old gray wolf way of looking at it, but as you said, radio is a lot more complicated than that. What I'm wondering about is how you felt about the time that you had to get it together. And I'm sure that listeners in particular and a lot of people in this business don't understand how long it takes to establish and grow a listening audience, especially for talk.
Yeah. And the thing about it is, if you're going to do this, if you're going to do talk radio, you got to have the stomach for the fight.
Yeah.
And more in the business these days, even though they may think they do at the time, once they get in there, they find out that there is much more to this than they had ever imagined. There are far more many things that can go wrong than they had ever imagined. And the bottom line is they eventually lose whatever stomach for the fight they might have ever had. And you just never really get there. You don't get the time that you need. I mean, it's a wonder, really, that we did at The Ticket.
Yeah.
But at The Ticket, it proved to be such a seemingly, potentially viable thing right off the top that we were allowed to stay with it. And when we were sold, the 2 times that we were sold, in both instances, we were sold to people who wanted us to do what we do, and they were going to handle everything else. And eventually we arrived at a place where they did just that.
Now, when you started out at The Ticket, and I don't want to say you started out at The Ticket started out with you, and you essentially molded the whole thing together, found the right people, put them in the job, stayed out of their hair, let them entertain people. I'm curious about that because at the time, correct me if I'm wrong, sports talk on a local level was just really starting to take off.
Yes.
As a viable alternative to standard talk radio.
Yeah.
So what was your vision at the time, and how did that, and I'm talking about The Ticket first of all, and then I want to come back to The Freak.
Okay.
How did it start for you in terms of your programming mind, guys on the air?
Yeah. Well, in the case of The Ticket, by the time it started in 1994, and by then, sports radio was in many, many other places. There were more places that had it than didn't. This was one of the places that was one of the last holdouts. And at that time, I would travel to some of these other places like Seattle, like Boston, like Chicago. I would hear it in other places. And I would think that'd be pretty neat to have in Dallas. And I'd come back here and I would talk to people about it, just conversation, that's all, with no idea that I would ever turn out to be as involved in it in the way that I was.
Interrupt you just for a second. What were you doing at the time?
At the time, I'd fallen into the tech bubble back then. This is like in the late 80s and early 90s, and you probably follow the business path close enough to remember this. But all of a sudden, for whatever reason, and this goes beyond, way beyond anything I can comprehend, but for whatever reason, there were a lot of tech outfits that just became flush with money. They had more than Southwestern Bell, like AT&T, GTE. Outfits like that found themselves with more money than they knew what to do with, but they had to do something with it. So what they tried to do, a lot of them, was to get some sort of news by phone service up and running. And that's what I was doing at GTE. They had an outfit called GTE On Call, and I was the one man sports arm of that thing. And it was great. It was a lot of fun. And it was a good time, but as I would go around on vacation to all these other places, I would hear sports radio, and I would think, it's weird that we don't have that in Dallas. And I'd come back and I'd start talking about it to, people, colleagues, and whoever I knew that I could talk to like that about it. I'd say, what do you think of about sports radio here? I mean, I hear it in all these other places. What would you think about the idea of sports radio here? Just throwing it out there to see what they thought. And to a man, everyone looked at me and just shook their heads and said, "Man, that would never work here."
Why?
That was my next question.
Right.
And their answer was, "Well, okay, if you're going to have it here, first of all, you got to have a team to carry their games. You got to have big name talent and you got to have a big signal." And I said, "Okay, those are things you need, but I'm still not here getting an answer to my question. Why wouldn't it work here, even without those things?"
Yeah.
And it just so happened that at the time I was around some guys who I thought were very clever individuals, very funny individuals. And those were the ones that I recruited right off the bat to do this. And I had to talk them into doing it. They didn't believe in it. They didn't believe that, number one, it would ever happen. And they didn't believe that if it did happen, it would work.
Would these be anybody we'd know?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Virtually everybody that, every long timer at the ticket that's still there today would fall under that heading.
So how did
And
the
there were,
opportunity, how did the opportunity come around?
well, it just so happened that at that time, while all this was going on, my then wife ran into a woman picking our kids up at day school one day. And she's a real outgoing woman, will talk to anybody. And this other lady was the same way. And they got to be friends. And it just so happened that this lady's husband had some sort of cloudy background in radio. He was never real forthcoming as to who and what and why or anything like that.
I've known some of those people.
Yeah, they're out there. But we would get together with these people, and he and I would just kind of go off by ourselves, and we'd find ourselves talking about radio over and over again. And finally, I brought up the idea of sports radio. And I was never thinking it was ever going to go anywhere. It was just me talking. That was it. No more, no less. So one day I got a call from him in the middle of the week, which was rare. And he said, "I got to get together with him because I think I found a guy who wants to play sports radio."
Yeah.
And I thought, "Oh, really?" And we had lunch at the Dixie House on Lakewood, may it rest in peace. And he said to me, "Okay, I want to go over with you every conversation we've ever had about radio. And we spent the next 3 hours with me talking and him writing stuff down.
This is the husband of the your wife's friend. Okay.
Yeah, his name was Jeffrey Dunbar. Alas, he's no longer with us. But he wrote all that down on a legal pad, and wherever that legal pad is today, that was the first tangible thing that would one day turn into the ticket. So that's how it started.
How did you imagine it working out in Dallas? Was it going to be different than in other cities?
Well, I knew we had to make it different. I knew we had to make it different because I had heard it in other places, and it was a little dry for my taste. But it just so happened that I'd been hanging out at games and stuff, and on the sports scene with guy and getting to know guys that I thought might could do it the way I had it in mind, that could bring a little humor to it and a little jackassery, if you will, a little chicanery, and still be credible enough with the sports end of it to handle that. And that's pretty much what happened.
So you finally got the meeting with the guy that wanted to talk about actually doing it?
Yes, I did. We did. And we decided right then, right there, that we were going to go for this. And the
But correct me if I'm wrong, this was before the current general manager, Dan Bennett, was involved with the company.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Before that.
Yeah, the ticket has been sold, I believe, 3 times.
Mm-hmm.
And Dan Bennett and Susquehanna, as it was known back then,
right,
were the purchasers of the next to last one. And then they sold out to Cumulus, and it remains with them today.
So let's go back to the forming of the Freak. You had all this tremendous success with the ticket. It can't be overstated. I've lost track of how many Murrow Awards and best sports station in the country awards that you won there.
Mm-hmm.
And my take from listening, when I came into the market, which was about 12 years ago, and I'm listening, and I've got a long time in radio, man. I've been in talk radio forever, and I listened to everything that was here, and I thought, man, this is not the same kind of town I'm used to hearing. Big city stuff doesn't sound big city. It sounds kind of parochial. It sounds kind of like these are people who live here, who have always lived here, who belong here and understand the people around them. And it kind of intimidated me a little bit, but my point was going to be that you didn't go casting your net far and wide to other markets and that sort of thing, looking for talent, did you?
No, we did not. We stayed right here. Fortunately, we were able to land just about everybody that I wanted us to land, and a couple which I really didn't, but we went after them and got them anyway. And it was all done right here. I can't think of anybody who had to move here from somewhere else right at first. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it was very parochial. It was very insiderish.
Yeah.
And for some reason, which I never have been able to put my finger on, really, all of that only made it more appealing.
Reason I'm laughing about that, Mike, is because I tell you, I've said a couple of times to people in the years that I've been here, I say, I understand and I certainly admire and respect the ticket for all of its success. And y'all were you were our big brother in the company. I mean, I was working for Cliff, and I was up there on the fourth floor with WBAP, and then there were all the music stations down there and everything else. So I said, the problem I have with the ticket is that I don't understand it. What you said, a lot of inside stuff. Good Lord. I would tune in and go, here's three or four guys having a great time, and I don't know what the hell they're talking about a lot of the time.
Yeah.
When they start talking about sports, they really know what they're doing. And mm-hmm. they've got my attention. But for the rest of it, I feel like I'm the next door neighbor that was not invited to a party.
Well, somehow we, and I'm at a loss to figure out exactly how, somehow we worked around that. Now, I think it's very important that we came along when we did. Because when we did come along, we were doing something completely different. You couldn't listen to us and say, yeah, yeah, they're just trying to be like these guys or that guys. We weren't. We were just trying to be us. That's it. And I think that's very important that we were able to set our own template and that for whatever reason, and this is another area that it gets kind of murky to me, but for whatever reason, people cared about it, were into it enough to fight through that and get to a point to where they understood it more, you know?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
But we brought them around.
Absolutely. Plus, I was also mindful of the fact that I was not your target audience exactly. So, you know.
But, well, yeah, you may not have been, but as things have turned out, the ticket really didn't and probably still doesn't have any particular target audience.
Yeah, demographic.
I mean, it's
got a big, wide age span.
Yeah, it's universal enough for everybody. It's truly a Heinz 57 of radio.
Yeah, well, that's the bottom line recipe of great radio, is that it appeals to everybody, or at least it can, has that opportunity. Yeah. All right, so now you came along and you did your however many years at the ticket, 20-some years, I guess.
26.
And then the story goes you decided to retire.
Yeah.
And I've heard from some people who knew you that they said that didn't make a lot of sense because you don't seem like a guy that would ever get off the air or stop doing what you're doing as long as you're having a good time and somebody's paying you to do it.
Mm-hmm.
So was that actually a retirement or was that a kind of moving into the next next opportunity?
At the time, it was retirement.
Yeah.
I mean, I didn't make one phone call trying to get another gig. I didn't talk to one person. You know, and I'd stayed in touch somewhat with some of the guys from back in the day, but I didn't, not once did I say, man, I'd really like to get back into it or anything like that.
Yeah.
And that changed when the opportunity to do The Freak came along. And there's one thing I should clarify about The Freak.
Yeah.
One thing that's out there that is not the correct narrative. I didn't start it. In fact, I was the last man on board. This was started by...
I thought you were the brains behind The Freak.
No, no, I was not. I was only on board probably a week or two before the thing hit the air, and everybody else was in place by then. What, it was longer than that? Okay, maybe a little longer than that, but everybody was else was in place by then. This was started by Ben and Skin, and the first thing they did was recruit all their friends that they wanted on there, and I got involved one day when Skin was fighting cancer not too long ago. And there was a day when he could not be on the air. Well, normally Ben would just call one of his friends who were, you know, one of the other guys that you later would hear on The Freak and have them in there. I guess he couldn't get a hold of any or couldn't get any of them to come in and do it because one day he reached out to me and said, what would you think about it? And this would have been the first time that I'd been on the air in years, and my first impulse was to tell him no. But that was quickly overshadowed by, come on, man, help a brother out here.
Yeah, sure.
He's calling you because he needs some help. It's just a one-off. You go up there, you do it for 3 hours, and that'll be that. You're helping him out. That's it. And so I did. And probably 3 or 4 days after that, I got another call from, I think it was Skin, not him. And he was saying, hey, let's get together at Lockwood. We got something we want to talk to you about. And I didn't know what that was. I didn't have any idea that what they were going to talk to me about was what it was going to be. And so I went over there and they said, listen, we're about to flip the eagle to talk. And we want you in on this. And they started telling me, without me responding to that in any particular way, they started telling me who all they had in on this. And they were all, you know, friends of mine from back in the day at the ticket, guys who I always had a great amount of regard for, but had never been given a real fair chance of doing anything up there. They were blocked. Now they're going nowhere up there. And a lot of them had already gotten out of there anyway, so there was no real non-compete issue with a lot of them. But that seemed like a lot of fun. I thought I could go in there and at least help them out, maybe show them the way around this or that, some of the things you run into. And so I thought about it for a little while and decided I wanted to do it. That yes, count me in. I want in on this. And that's how it took off.
That one of the things that forgot what I was going to ask you. This happens at least once in every one of these conversations.
Oh, tell me about it.
One of the things that strikes me about all the people on the ticket, I don't want to start naming off the online on the on air staff, although I could, but I'm afraid I'd leave somebody out. And it's just more it's more important, I think, to say that every single person on there on a regular basis is number one, does plenty of homework. They go in there with a plan. There's no just winging it. Although you might get that impression because people are being very natural, very forthcoming as to who they are. And having conversations with each other that even includes arguing once in a while. These are three-dimensional people, which is something I've been preaching in my career for, far too long, and it never did work as far as I could do. But that was a big strong impression for me. I said, okay, these guys are not just making it up. It's obvious that they have radio backgrounds. They know how to do the craft, but they do it within themselves. And then you've got the slug line or the motto, we say what we want, and that pretty well just kind of explains the whole thing. How did all that evolve?
Well, that was kind of the plan all along. Nobody really wanted to get into nobody really wanted to be pigeonholed as being this or that. We wanted to keep a wide amount of latitude to where we could do whatever we wanted at a given time. If we wanted to do sports, we did that. If we wanted to do something else, we did that. And that was really the neat thing about it. Now, was that a smart move? I don't know. I don't know. That might have been one of the failings of the freak, because sometimes I think that people like to hear things at least positioned in such a way to where they think they know what they're getting. And if you do that and you do it well enough, then once you start wandering off track, before you know it, they start to realize that, hey, they're wandering off track. But by then, they've bought in. They're all in. They're going to wait and see how this story ends, even though it has nothing to do with anything that they thought they were going to get.
Well, again, that comes back to what I was trying to say is that people went on the air in there. I say guys. I'm from California. We say guys like y'all say y'all. So I apologize to the great women who performed on the Freak, and you had some great ones.
Oh, we do. We
Yeah.
did.
Well, I hate talking about it in a past tense, but no. So what my point was that while there's so many people that go on the radio and get an opportunity to talk about whatever you want, man, within certain guidelines. The words you hear more often from those people is I. That's the one with the real pronoun problem in this business, I think, because it's like everybody wants to tell their story about what happened to them over the weekend or what happened. But you guys were relentless about presenting a really interesting topic of conversation with lots of perspective to the audience. You were addressing the audience, and never lost sight of that.
Well, we tried not to. I think it's one of the things that we all kept very closely in mind, that we're here at the service of them, not the other way around. And we always tried to at least keep in mind that we are addressing them, and there may be certain things, certain blanks we have to fill in along the way. And if we have to do that, we'll do it, you know? But yeah, I thought that was one of the neat things about the freak. There are a lot of things that I really did like about it. And make no mistake, I'm not thrilled with what happened and the way it all came down or anything like that. But I think we had a really good product. I think we did some really good radio. I know we don't have the ratings to substantiate that. But as I would make my way around town, I had so many people come up and tell me that they liked it. And even if they were just trying to have a momentary interaction with me and couldn't care less about it, still, it was neat to hear that. And I do think that we connected with a whole lot of people out there. And I do think that what we did is viable. And I do think that if there is some way that somebody a little bit more equipped, a little better equipped to take on such an endeavor ever wanted to again, then I'd love that.
Well, like I said, I didn't think you had enough time. You know, 16 months. You guys were just, as far as I'm concerned, and I, you know, I'm a wizened veteran listener. Mm-hmm. I know what I'm listening to. You guys were just really, really hitting your stride. And it kind of surprised me when I read that you could see this coming from a mile off. And I guess that's because you knew the corporate environment within that radio station and that company. But, you know, was that it? Were you feeling, you know, man, they just need to give us another year or whatever it takes?
I think we all would have liked that, but we all knew what was coming. It was just a matter of time. The question was, when are they going to do it, and how are they going to do it, and what's it going to be like when they do it? And we got our answers to those things.
Was there some sort of understanding in the beginning? Okay, but you have to really, really make an impact in the numbers within the first year or something of that nature?
If so, that was not ever delineated to me. I mean, they may have told others that, but I never heard anything like that. I thought we were going to have a reasonable chance at doing it and a reasonable chance to establish ourselves and find our audience and have them find us. And as things turned out, that's not the way it went.
I think your comment in The Observer, too, was that Odyssey, the parent company, it was just not, I think you said it, this kind of radio was not their bag or something. And they didn't know how to deal with it.
Well, it's iHeart, not Odyssey. It's iHeart.
Oh, is it? I'm sorry. Okay. Thank you.
Yeah. iHeart is a music radio company, and running music radio is way, way different than running talk radio. They may run some talk radio somewhere, but they really never have had it here. Instead, they have just a whole slew of music stations up there. And music radio stations are not people intensive.
Right.
They are not, they don't require a lot of oversight. Most of them run via tracks, you know, voice tracks. Mm-hmm. And it's all synced up, and usually there's not even a guy in the room while, you know, while whatever show is going on is going on.
Right.
And talk radio is not like that. Talk radio requires constant maintenance, constant vigilance, and it requires people on the job and on point. And they're just not built that way.
And it's not cheap relative to
music
radio. It's very expensive.
Yeah, it's more people intensive.
Which makes it very curious that they would even endeavor to have 2- and 3-person shows at this day and age.
Yeah, it does. And here we're getting into an area that I really don't have any kind of feel for, but I hear what you're saying, and it does seem like very, very foreign turf. And if it was me, I would have looked at that foreign turf and said, man, this is not what we do here.
Yeah.
This is not our bag. This is not what we do. We're not equipped to make this work.
I've worked for a lot of large corporations myself. I say, well, I imagine that somewhere in some mahogany-lined room that there's a couple of people going at it tooth and nail over this particular issue, and the other guy won.
Well, I'm sure there were.
Yeah.
I'm sure there were all kinds of Donnybrooks over what the hell are we doing here, you know? That kind of thing. And another guy said, come on, let's give this a chance. This got a real chance to work. And I was, oh yeah, does it? Well, yeah, I think if we just give it a little time. And, you know, the guy that was the skeptic won out, always.
Radio needs support from the people who are paying the bills, and they have to understand that it's up to them to figure out how to make the money. Not up to you guys who are on the air. It's not up to the creators of the content. And
yeah.
Most of this industry, at least in terms of the large corporations, has completely lost track of that, in my opinion. And, you know, I kind of know what I'm talking about. So
one place that they have it is Cumulus. Cumulus is that way. Cumulus gives those guys what they need, and they let them do it.
Yeah.
And I have a lot more regard for that place now than I did at the time.
Well, Mike, what happens to you now? What are you going to do, or do you know?
I don't know. You know, if something pops up for me, I'll look at it.
Yeah.
I kind of got a little bit re-energized from this last round. I started to enjoy doing radio again. I would hope that I would really like for something to pop up, but if it doesn't, that's fine too, you know? I mean, I've had more fun and better times than in this game than most. And if nothing pops up for me henceforth, well, I'll just take my toys and go home and look back and say it's been a good one.
That's the only attitude you can have.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, thanks again very much for your time. It's a pleasure to have talked with you. I mean, I used to see you from time to time in the hallways over there, and once in a while in one of those big meetings where everybody in the building was involved. You were obviously
Yes.
the 800-pound gorilla in those meetings, man. You'd stand up and ask a question, and finally everybody was being quiet now.
I don't know about that. There are a lot of 800-pound gorillas in there.
Yeah. All right. Well, listen, thanks again, and have a great life. Hope that you continue to wake up healthy, happy, and looking forward to yet another good day.
I'll take that anytime, Dave. Thanks for having me.
All right.